This episode of Decisions That Matter features a wonderful interview with Chris Yarbrough from the Tennessee Department of Transportation, or TDOT. Chris shares several actionable pieces of advice from his years in procurement about how to effectively create a new centralized procurement division from scratch, and how to excel by being agile when the plan has to change thanks to unforeseen events like the 2020 pandemic. Decisions That Matter is brought to you by Procurated. For a limited time, Procurated will donate $5 to NIGP's membership scholarship for every review that our listeners write on Procurated.com. So visit the site today and share your experiences working with local suppliers to help fund NIGP memberships for at-risk members. Hope you enjoy this episode and have a great day. Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters. All right, welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast. I'm your host, Alex Stonehouse, and I'm joined by Bernadette Lowney. And today on this great episode, we have Chris Yarbrough with us, who is the Director of Procurement, Contracting, and Inventory at the Tennessee Department of Transportation. Thanks for joining us today, Chris.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
How about we start out a little bit, giving our audience a taste for kind of how you got into the public sector, how your career has evolved to where you're at now, and how you made it over to the Tennessee Department of Transportation.
Sure. Well, absolutely. Well, again, my name is Chris Yarbrough, and currently I'm the Director of Procurement and Contracting and Inventory for the Tennessee Department of Transportation. But as far as my career, I have been with the state of Tennessee in a public sector business setting now since 2012. Prior to that, I worked for the Chapter 13 bankruptcy trustee. I was getting used to, it was kind of like that was an introduction for me into contracting and reviewing contracts and looking at that sort of thing, as well as some negotiation experience that I gained there also. And in about 2011, 2012, that time period, I had recently wrapped up my bachelor's degree. I got my bachelor's degree a little later than most. So I was finishing up about that time. My bachelor's is in management and human relations. That, coupled along with my knowledge of reviewing contracts and that sort of thing that I'd gained in the trustee's office, made me a good candidate for a role that the state was creating at that time. The state of Tennessee established legislation in 2010 that created our central procurement office. Prior to 2012, when this agency or this state office opened up, everybody in the state of Tennessee was very decentralized in how they procured things, whether it was professional services or commodities or what have you. So the goal of this new division or this new agency was to really centralize all of the state's efforts around procurement, you know, and contracting, and there being kind of one authority, one voice for the state on that. And so I was brought into that office very early on, barely a month, if even a month after they opened. And so I was one of the first, they called them sourcing analysts, sourcing specialists that existed at that time. There were only six of us really in the very beginning. And we grew with the office, because since the office was brand new, they were having to create everything from scratch. That was my first experience in actually helping to develop something in some way. Now, I was only a small part of that development over there, but I was part of it, and I saw how it grew, and I saw, you know, how what kind of the challenges might be in developing something new in a government public sector environment. And so that was very beneficial to me, and I learned a lot in the time that I was there. And I was there with the state central procurement office, started out as a specialist, like I said, but I ended up becoming a team lead. And so I was over a group of specialists who worked very closely with state agencies. And, you know, I got a feel for how other agencies in state government also operate. So my time there in the state central procurement office for those 5 years of between 2012 and 17 were very instrumental in me just getting a real firm understanding about how government works and what the business of that looks like, and really all of the laws and the things that go into how we spend our money, you know, not just from the financial management side of it, but also from the procurement side of it, really understanding what it takes to go through a full procurement process and why you might make some of those various decisions. So in 2017, at that point, I had had a little bit of success in my role with the Central Procurement Office. I ran a procurement that ended up winning a gold Cronin from NASPO, National Association of State Procurement Officials. And that was in 2015. And so I had a little bit of success behind me at that point and had learned a lot. And I'd always worked with the Tennessee Department of Transportation. I told you that whenever I came in, I was a sourcing specialist, and then I ended up managing a group of specialists. At all points, procurement regarding TDOT or Tennessee Department of Transportation always kind of fell to me in some way. I was always involved with it. So in 17, I was brought over by the Department of Transportation. They asked if I would be interested in a position that would get me over here at TDOT, and maybe we would start looking at, in the process of this unrelated, it wasn't a procurement specific position, but in the process of being in this role, we would look at how TDOT does their procurement, because they were very decentralized as well. And so that is what got me to TDOT. And I guess I'll pause there and let you, and because I've talked a lot, so maybe you can tell me if I answered your question or if you want me to go on.
No, that's great background. And I think you're being very humble. The Cronin Award is a really big deal.
I was going to say, if you didn't bring that up, I was ready to throw that in there, because it definitely is.
Yeah, well, if you look at the 2015 Gold Cronin, the Cronin listing, Tennessee won the Cronin for tourism, marketing and advertising. That was my solicitation, and that method was developed by me and the people that worked with me on the solicitation.
That's wonderful. So can you tell us a little bit about why maybe historically TDOT's structure was so decentralized before you got there a year and a half ago? Was that something that was on purpose, or was it just that's how it evolved over time? And then what made that need evident to make it more centralized?
Gotcha. So I'll be honest. I think because the state had been so decentralized for so long, I mean, again, up until 2012, the state of Tennessee as a whole was very decentralized. So I think it was just a natural way of how things had been. There was a specific group at headquarters TDOT that only handled like RFP, large scale contracts, but there was no centralized group that really handled everything else. And then, you know, our construction division, they do their own bid lettings, and everything was just decentralized. So I think it was a multi-pronged approach. I think there was a no knowledge on part of our leadership at TDOT that said, hey, we know we should be doing this better. We know that there are things that we could change that might make us more efficient. And I think that was kind of part of the push. But there was also, it had become apparent over the years since the Central Procurement Office, at least, had been in place, that there were areas where we really needed agency-specific training. We needed people out in the field to really understand what their role meant and how they were supposed to function in that role. And prior to that, it had always been what I personally call word-of-mouth training. It was just, hey, this is how the person did it before me, and so that's what I think I'm supposed to do now. You know, this is based on somebody's notes or somebody's workarounds for various things. And there was no standardization. But to your original question, there was an element of geography that played a factor in the decentralization of things, or the natural decentralization of it. Because in East Tennessee, you've got mountains. In Middle Tennessee, you've got hills, some mountains, some waterways. West Tennessee is completely flat. It's just farmland and just flat. So there were very different needs across the state from one region to the next. In East Tennessee, you get snow just about every year. In West Tennessee, you're lucky if you get it once a year. Those types of things all played a factor for TDOT. And there just had never been an organized effort, I guess, around trying to come to some sort of compromise on equipment or other needs, and leveraging the state's buying power on that. So that's part of what was recognized, and all those things together were factors in creating this division.
Very exciting. And that totally makes sense, the geographic aspect of it. So I know you played a major role. It's part of the reason why we're here today, of building out that procurement division within TDOT. So I'd love to just kind of jump into it. So what was the plan? So like, what kind of research did you guys research with other states, with how they organize their Department of Transportation? What went into building out that division?
Well, it was a lot of effort, a lot of meetings, over and over meetings with a core group of people, leaders within TDOT, that once we realized, or it was determined, okay, this need exists. And once it was known that we were going to move into a division, there were really three things that we started looking at. One is, all right, what is the need that we're actually trying to address? And what is the intention we have for this division? Meaning, are we intending that this procurement division is actually going to be doing all of the procurements for TDOT? Or is this division at headquarters intended to be one of training and compliance, where there's an oversight function, a training function, and making sure that we're standardizing processes and that. So that was one of the considerations that we had to decide upon. But then the other two other resources we really did look at a lot. One, we looked for other state agencies within the state of Tennessee and what they have. TDOT is by far the largest state agency when it comes to procurement volume, but there are other state agencies that kind of have a similar model, a very spread out model. Like, for example, our Department of Environment and Conservation for the state, they manage all of our state parks. Well, we've got state parks from one end to the other. So they had a similar model, just on a smaller scale. And so we looked at them and said, how are they structured? What do they do? But we also looked at other state DOTs, specifically their DOTs. We looked at the general model for South Carolina, and we looked at Georgia's model. Then we've also looked at Colorado's model. And honestly, Colorado is one that really intrigued us a lot. We really liked, after talking to their director in a couple of different meetings and just seeing their org structure and how they were structured, we liked that general model. Now, I can't say that ours is 100%, you know, a recreation of that, because it by no means is a 100% recreation. I think it's important that when planning, you have to look at the specific situation you're in. You know, no two states are the same, no two situations are the same, but it's great to get ideas from those. And I think that's what we did. Once we addressed that, you know, our division was going to be really more of a hybrid approach when it comes to training and procurement activity. Once we established that, and I can elaborate on what we look like, but once we established that, we took elements from other state agencies inside Tennessee government, and we also took quite a few elements from Colorado as well, from another state DOT that had an interesting structure specifically.
I love that. And it's such a thoughtful approach. Because, I mean, hopefully in a perfect world, you don't want to do a restructure like this more than once every couple decades.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you want to build something that's going to last for a long time and ripple effect, and you're going to develop it and build it over the years. So definitely not something you rush into. So it sounds like you guys did a lot of your due diligence there.
We did. I mean, after our division was created, the Procurement and Contracts Division was established officially in October of 2019. Well, I had been here since August of 2017, and that wasn't by any means the only thing I was doing or working on, but it was one of the things that we were talking about that entire time. And so it ended up taking about 2 years to get us to the point of beginning, but that's the key word there. Once we were established and understood what we thought to be the right structure, then now I'm the director. We're officially a division. We exist. So what do we do now? I mean, how do we actually achieve the goals that we're setting out to achieve? And how are we impacting business? And honestly, how are we impacting business both in a positive and negative way? I mean, because, you know, change is always going to come with some struggles. There are always going to be roadblocks or speed bumps or whatever that's going to derail you in some way. Or not, maybe not derail you, but at least give you pause and say, okay, well, how do we deal with this now? What's the approach we want to take on this situation? And we've had quite a few of those. So that's what started in 2019, at the end of 2019. And then, of course, not even 6 months later, COVID hit. So that throws a whole nother another element into all of this that nobody could have planned for. So it was a lot of thought and effort put into the planning, but that was just the beginning of what we had to do.
Before, and definitely want to hear about 2019 and after the fact, before we get there, I would love to hear more about kind of putting those plans into action. One thing that you mentioned that is really interesting to me is deciding what that need is. So are you guys going to be RFP purchasing, handling a lot of that side of things, or that process compliance training piece? So what was kind of the thought process and what did you guys end up doing?
Well, we ended up with three different branches, if you want to call them branches, of our division. So I have under me, there's an assistant director. Daniel Leeson is his name. He's an excellent guy. And he's done a lot of hard work since he's been here to help us get as organized as we are. So Daniel Leeson's our assistant director. And then under him, we have three teams. We have a solicitation and contracts team. And that solicitation and contracts team primarily works with our headquarters divisions and works with them to put together RFPs, manage contracts, handle that higher level of procurement activity, or what might be classified as procurement and contracting activity. We've got a team for that. That team also handles any of our legislative requests and requirements. But then we also have our training and compliance team, which is something that I alluded to. So we will have that. But then we also have a third team, which is still fairly small. It's, so all of these are fairly small, but the third team is the smallest and as of right now. And that is our regions and district support team. And so our state is broken up into regions and then within those regions, smaller districts, when it comes to state TDOT's perspective anyway. So this third team that I have is really supposed to be there to be that go-to and support. They do analytics for us on a lot of the activity that's going on out there so we can get spend analysis on various types of products and services. But they really are a go-to group that these buyers have started to become to trust. And the buyers out in the field who are doing this on an everyday basis, who really didn't have a lot of specific guidance and training in the past related to procurement activity, now they're starting to go to this team. And so that's their resource and their kind of their guidance. So whenever they're unsure, they come to us. If they have problems with processes or something doesn't seem to make sense to them, we look at that. But then we also take the struggle that is occurring there and we look at every other district and every other region and say, could this be happening other places and we don't know? And we start reaching out and finding out. So part of what that group is doing, aside from support and analytics, is helping us create some standardization across our state in TDOT procurement. We've got our training and compliance team, like I said, who is now, and actually next week, we're rolling out our first big training initiative called Foundations. And it's intended to be, hey, this is why we do the things we're doing. Yes, we're showing them in that training how to create requisitions and, you know, purchase things correctly, but why does that matter? I feel that it's extremely important to teach everybody why they're doing, why they're being asked to do something so they understand the importance of it. And that's an approach that hasn't been taken in the past that we're trying to take now. And then, I've already explained the contracting team. So those are our three groups, and that's kind of how we're structured and how we cover all of TDOT.
That's great. And that component of it with giving people the resources that they need and allowing them to ask questions and actually go in there feeling super confident about the purchases they're making, it really can't be kind of overstated. And it's so relatable from what we're trying to do, right? Like here at Procurated, we're trying to get people as much information as we can about suppliers, their track record, all of that, in a similar way where it's like the difference between going into a procurement and making a purchase where you're 100% or 99.5% sure you're picking the right supplier, doing it for the right amount, for the right duration, versus being 80% sure. Right. That's a huge difference, right? So like if you have the ability to ask somebody who's done it before, who's been in the space for 10, 20 years, like that, all of that together makes such a big difference on how you operate day to day.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, our training team even went so far. We've got a SharePoint site that we've created that is on our network and available for all these buyers to access. So all of their resources are there, but we've also created it's a Google-like search engine so that they can easily locate, you know, contracts, because there's tons and tons of contracts that are available to use in the state, but it's not very easy to access them or find out what's on them. So we've created a database that does that pretty easily. So really it's about educating and providing the right resources to everybody involved. And that's what has really been lacking in the past.
Well, and having a team that's dedicated to doing that. Because I mean, I think even a lot of the other guests that we've had on here are just people we know in the procurement space. I think everyone knows the importance of training and working with your agencies and your end users to make sure they understand the process. But there's only so many hours of the day when you're also doing the purchasing, the contracting, and all of the other things that you have to do. I think it's easy for something like that to fall on the wayside. So to have a team that it's like, this is important, we're giving you dedicated time, that we want you to make the best of this, just makes such a difference, I'm sure.
It does. It really does. That is everybody thinks, I say everybody, shouldn't say it like that. The perception may be across TDOT that, hey, if we need something now, we've got a procurement division, we can go to them. And that is absolutely true. But just as important as that, we want to teach them how to do it. We want to teach them how to fish and how to make sure that a spec document is in good shape, that a scope is written well, that we're, you know, scope, schedule, budget, all these things that we have to account for, all are accounted for accurately. And I just can't overstate enough how important that training and compliance team is to our division.
That was actually a good segue into my next follow-up question. What did the kind of internal training look like in terms of like educating the rest of TDOT of saying like, we're here, we're new, this is our new structure, this is how you're going to interact with us? How big of a component was that piece to launching the division?
It was important. And I will say, you know, I was very fortunate, and I'm sure there's other people out there just as well, but I was very fortunate with having the leadership that I have that was so supportive and so in lockstep with this need. They understood the importance of it and why we needed this. And so we would have all directors meetings where every director in TDOT was there, and they would state, hey, this is our new division and this is what we're doing and this is what their purpose is. And that was our introduction and kind of like us being released to go forth and do great things, right? So for us to go out and start working with these divisions, and we had to build those relationships, right? And we still are. I mean, we're still early in our development. I mean, a year and a half, really almost 2 years, because really COVID kind of wiped out a lot of 2020 for us and just being able to develop and really build a lot of relationships. But so we're still doing that. And now through hard work and being very intentional about our discussions and communicating clearly, we're starting to really build trust and faith in our organization, I feel. And I'm very happy about that. I'm very proud of that.
Were there any early wins, or like, can you give us an example of kind of like a first project or procurement you guys did that you were like, yes, like this is why we made the division. It was so much better.
Well, yeah, it's not so much about a specific procurement as it is, you know, when we were able to, one of the things that we heard often before we were created from the buyers in the field is, I don't feel like I have any resources or education or a point of contact to help me, and I don't know what I'm doing. That was a very clear and pretty much consistent theme amongst quite a few people out in our field. When we were able to create our SharePoint site and get that accessible to all of our buyers, that became a very critical moment for us, because immediately we were able to have a forum, a designated forum, where we could interact with all of them as a group, and provide them immediate resources. And there were times where we did interviews with every buyer in TDOT over the course of the last year, a lot of them by Teams or WebEx or something of that nature. But we did interviews with all of them to talk about what it is that they do, what frustrates them about their job, what things do they love about their job, and how do they think it could be better? You know, I'm also pretty big on if it's a problem and you think you know an answer, tell me. I want to know so we can start working on it and see if that's the right thing. Well, through that process, we realized that the biggest need was just the information that they didn't have access to. So I think that big thing, to answer your question, that big thing for us was the SharePoint site. Getting that up and going was a way to open up communication for everybody all at one time. And there's a discussion board on there. People can go and talk about problems that they're having, or has somebody had this happen to them, or is this an issue you've seen before? And immediately there's somebody seeing it and they can respond. It's almost like a constant instant messenger in a way, but it's always there and people get notice of it when new things pop up.
So I'm assuming that when you guys kind of launched this new phase at the end of 2019, you had probably some goals, a project plan. You had an idea of what the next 6 months look like, next year looks like, beyond that potentially. Yes. What kind of happened when offices started shutting down, pandemic hits? Did you guys have to make a lot of pivots?
Yes.
How did that all kind of work out for you?
So our plan was this. We wanted to grow organically. And so over the course of between October and we'll say basically February, October to February, we had hired two individuals. One was for the region and district support management role. And another one was somebody to oversee our training and compliance group. The headquarters procurement, we hadn't gotten to yet. I was assisting with things. Me and my assistant director were assisting with things at that time that would come up as far as procurement related questions, but we hadn't become extreme. We were more an advisory role than an active role at that point. So COVID hits in March of 2020 and all of our plans immediately change, as it did with most of the world. So our effort to try to get a training program in place and out the doors by end of calendar year became exponentially more difficult. And we just weren't able to do it. We weren't able to get our first training program up by then. So we had to spend that time, one, managing more procurement efforts than we anticipated originally, because it took at least 2 months, I would say, for everybody to really start to kind of get familiar with virtual meetings and all of that. And so, you know, we did a lot of phone calls that were talking about documents we were looking at on each other's computer or whatever, and just trying to help people who are used to being in person and working with everybody right there next to them, getting them used to reviewing contracts or solicitations or whatever through this virtual world and environment, and the tools that they had to help them doing that. That was a struggle. Maybe it shouldn't have been, you know, maybe it could have been better had we had some ability to plan for it, but we just weren't ready. We weren't ready for that at that time. And so we had to work a little bit more hands-on with all of the divisions that do RFPs and develop scope than we probably would have been if we had been able to do a weekly in-person meeting. If that makes sense. And honestly, from March through, I would say, November, we were still working towards our goals of developing our training. It just wasn't moving as fast as we wanted. So I would estimate that we're probably about 6 to 8 months behind where we had hoped we would have been at this point. Ideally, one of the things that we'll be doing soon is rolling out at the end of this calendar year some additional assistance and guidance at a higher level of procurement in all of our districts. So right now, they all have a procurement officer one title. We are adding a position in each district that is a procurement officer too. And this level of individual will be able to provide more hands-on assistance to the frontline buyer. And we had intended to have that type of change implemented in the first quarter of this year as opposed to the last quarter of this year. So it put us about 6 to 8 months behind schedule.
That makes sense. And when you consider that the pandemic was impactful enough to put a lot of people out of business or completely derail what they were working on, just to delay it is still a pretty significant achievement there for you guys. Have you seen so far any kind of immediate results in terms of metrics, whether it's an increase in savings or project quality or vendor performance or anything like that in the last year or so?
I would say we're not as far down the path of being able to quantify the return on investment that we would have hoped. And I hate to keep doing it, but I do attribute that to where we're at in the COVID world.
That makes total sense.
But I will say that's a financial return on investment. The internal return on investment, I believe, is pretty significant. I can't tell you how many peers, and I've had several that have come up to me and specifically said, thank you guys for being here. Thank you for just what you've done in the last year and a half. It has made our lives so much easier. We don't have to figure that thing out anymore. And so procurement is necessary for every aspect of business. But in most cases, a lot of cases, it's just that thing I have to do to get what I need to get. And I'm not really super familiar with it. So I think just the confidence that most of our agency, if not all of our agency, has in what we're doing and the trust they've now put in us to work with us and to assist them. And then the feedback of, hey, this has made our lives a lot easier and better to do our job. That type of return on investment 100% exists. And I see it on a monthly, if not sometimes weekly basis where that's happening.
That's awesome. I'm sure there's some correlation too between that type of improvement and the actual financial metrics, probably.
Sure.
And then, of course, that helps with employee retention and it helps with overall happiness and all that kind of stuff. So that's great to hear.
Now, I will say, I mentioned that we have an analytics guy as well who helps us a lot there. A way we have of measuring that long term is we will be doing spend analytics on a regular basis on current contracts, existing purchases that we may be considered for contracts. You know, we will be looking at the cost savings there as those come up. And some have already begun, but we haven't completed a process yet where we can actually do those analytics because that part of it really wasn't a focus over the first year.
Mm-hmm. If you were to give advice to somebody who's in a similar spot where they're between the decentralized and centralized groups, what would be the main thing you would have them look towards in jumping in and making that switch?
I would say make sure you know the business, meaning make sure you understand how the organization functions. Even if you're restructuring, how your organization functions today is likely different than the day that you created the division or that it was created. So based on, you know, technology has changed so much in how we operate just in the last 10 years, even alone talking about the last 20 or 30, you know, go into it understanding that there are unknowns that you are not currently familiar with. And there are things that you didn't even know you didn't know. You know, and be open to that. You know, don't let that startle you, but definitely be looking for that as well. Like, look for the blind spots. For example, our division, when we were created, we were coming in as the authority for procurement. But the truth is, I mean, yes, we were the new centralized group, but procurement's been happening in TDOT since day one. Okay, it's been happening in some way, shape, or form. So understand what has been happening, whether it's right or wrong, or whether it's good or could be better or whatever. Go in, be open to hearing what they've done, and also ask why. Why were you doing it that way? Because maybe there is a reason that impacts business that you're not aware of. And I have experienced that firsthand. There have been things that I've come in and I've said, man, that just doesn't look right. That should be done differently. That should be done better. And here's what I think it should be done like. But then you talk to the business or you talk to your finance division or you talk to whomever and you find out, well, we do that because we have to track spend in a certain way for federal funding, as an example. You know, there might be reasons that could change your mind and then be open to that change. Don't get so stuck in your own idea of what it should be before you know everything, you know, and allow yourself to be flexible and agile there.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's where you get the, yeah, we'd love to do it that way. It's a great idea. But here's why we do it the way that we're doing it. So we like to ask this question of everyone we have on the podcast. Do you have any people who have helped you along in your career, mentored you, any of that that you'd like to give a shout out to?
You know, I've thought about that a little bit, and there have been, honestly, there have been quite a few people that have helped me at different points in time in my career, whether it was giving me advice or maybe it was just giving me an opportunity, you know, advice, opportunities. It's all what you make of that advice and or opportunity. And so it was hard to just pick one, but I did just pick one. But this individual, the impact they had on me is more about who I am as a person, which has formed how I've approached this. You know, my grandfather was a farmer in West Tennessee. When he passed away a few years ago, he was 94. And I'm sorry, not 94. He was 91. Excuse me. When he passed away a few years ago, he would be 94 now, I believe. But he never really went anywhere in his life outside of a 30-mile radius of this farm and the community that he lived in. And he worked hard his whole life in fields, but he saved his money and he took care of what he had to, and he did for his family. But everybody in his community, and I know I'm biased, it's my grandfather, but everybody in his community seemed to just love him and respected him and thought he was just, you know, well, if that person said it, then it's the, might as well treat it as the gospel type thing. And I asked him one time why so many people treated him like that. And he thought about it. And he said, I really can't give you a good, honest answer other than to say I've always been honest with everybody that I've ever encountered in my life. Whether the information was good or bad or indifferent, I have always been honest and I've always been very compassionate about what they need. What can I do for them? Because if I can help them make their lives better, then by default, I'm making my life better. And that one thing that he told me, that was probably about 20 years ago when he said that to me, but that really meant something to me because I admired how much other people seemed to admire him. That is the way that I've tried to approach every personal or professional relationship that I've ever had. Be honest, be compassionate, care about what they need, and don't be selfish about my own goals. And to this point, that seems to serve me well. And I don't mean that in a selfish way. It has built not just opportunities for me, but friendships and relationships that I wouldn't have the opportunities. I wouldn't be in any of the positions that I'm in now professionally or personally if I hadn't operated in that way and built those relationships and built those friendships and cared about what mattered to others. That's the best I got.
Well, I'm not going to try to top that with any commentary because that was beautiful, man. I got a little tear over here, I think, on the part of that story. I love it. And that's a great story. And I think that kind of feeling and relationship with people is really like what we can all hope for. So that's going to wrap it up for today. So thanks for joining us, Chris. This has been really great. I know the audience is going to love this one. It turned out really awesome. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.